the final list of alternatives and measures for inclusion in draft amendment 3. We also have a recommendation from the skate committee to the council to consider an adjustment in the multi-species plan under B Days at Sea relative to skates, and we'll get to that as well. There are 6 documents that are relevant for today's discussion on skates. One is the revised Amendment 3 decision document. That's the first document. That is the document with 6 alternatives laid out for the council to consider and to take action on for inclusion in this amendment. The second document is analysis, conclusions, and recommendations from the PDT relative to those alternatives and management measures. The third document is comments from the PDT on the B Days at Sea fishery and the groundfish plan. Document number 4 is a description of interim catch limits and accountability measures. We'll need to go through that. Document 5 is a description of a proposed skate annual review and specification setting process. And then document number 6 might be one you want to pull out and keep handy at the top. That is the summary and description and motions from the most recent committee and AP meeting. We'll be referring to that as we go through the motions. So I'll turn it over to Andy and ask him to just give a synopsis of the types of analysis that the PDT's gone through and how we've ended up with these alternatives in front of us today.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm going to refer to document 2, page 2. The council at the April meeting voted to include 3 types of measures in the amendment, and other measures were deemed, considered, and rejected. 3 measures being a possession limit, and then 2 types of area management. One using time area closures, which would apply to vessels fishing for skates. The other being a gear-restricted area that would apply to all gears capable of catching skates, which include trawls, gill nets, dredges, and hand gear, hook gear. Those measures would apply to areas that were identified by the PDT last year as having high catch per unit effort for skates based upon sea sampling data from 2004-2006. Those areas are shown at the back of document 1, map 1. There are 5 areas. Areas 1, 2, and 3 surround the Nantucket Lightship area. And primarily, they benefit winter skate. It's where the gillnet fishery occurs and the trawl fishery for vessels targeting skates. Areas 4 and 5 are in the Gulf of Maine to the north and northeast of the western Gulf of Maine closure area. And those areas had high catch per unit effort in the survey. But there's not a lot of effort there, but they would benefit thorny skates and act as a conservation measure. The PDT analyzed those areas using the 2-bin model, which had previously been used for groundfish. And basically how it works is the model assumes that the trips will be displaced to the remaining open areas within each region, Gulf of Maine, Georgia's Bank, and Southern New England, and then Mid-Atlantic. So any trips that occurred in areas 1, 2, and 3 were assumed to be displaced within the Georges Bank area, and the conservation benefit would accrue from differences in catch per unit effort. So the results of those are in Table 1 of Document 2. We had two allocation alternatives that the PDT recommended to the committee. One based upon a split between the wing fishery and the bait fishery based upon the historic landings from 2005 to 2007. The other, a split between the two fisheries based upon a longer time period, 1995 to 2006, which favors a little bit more for the bait fishery. So our target reduction for the shorter and more recent time period was 36.5% for the wing fishery and 31% for the whole bait fishery. With the area closures as time area closures, the model predicted a 15.1% reduction in the wing fishery and a 4.6% increase in the bait fishery. So the remainder to be achieved by possession limits was 21% for the wing fishery and 36% for the bait fishery. So then the PDT analyzed the 2007 landings to determine what possession limit would achieve that reduction in landed mortality at various possession limits. And the results are in Table 5. For the alternative that I just went through, using time area closures with a 500-pound limit to determine what vessels were targeting skates, a 5,300-pound possession limit would achieve a 21% reduction. And coincidentally, in the bait fishery, a 5,300-pound limit would reduce landed mortality by 36%, achieving the desired mortality reduction. So we analyzed all those scenarios, the two allocation scenarios for the wing and the whole bait fishery, to identify possession limits that reduce mortality by the required amount. And all the results are shown in Table 5. Now, we included those in the alternatives, which is Document 1. And there are a pair of alternatives, one using the hard TAC with possession limits and area management, and another one using a target TAC with possession limits and area management. But those possession limits are the same in Measure 4, and will include a time area closures for areas 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. That's Measure 6. Another pair of alternatives was proposed to the committee and is being brought forward by a committee is alternative 3, which is using a target TAC with area management as an accountability measure. In other words, as landings approach the TAL, the time area closures would go into a place in season at some percent of the TAL as an accountability measure only, and that's Measure 6. Alternative 4, which would use a hard TAC approach as described in Item 2, with only a possession limit. And those possession limits have a range depending upon which allocation option, and we're proposing to take both allocation options out to public hearing. Alternative 5 is the same as alternative 4, but using the target TAC approach. In other words, they're described in the PDT document and the specification package. And then the sixth alternative is one that was brought forward by the advisors with a wing possession limit and a quota managed skate bait fishery for vessels having bait letters of authorization. So perhaps I should stop there and take questions. There are a couple other additional features to that that perhaps would come up later.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Are there any questions right now on the six alternatives that are part of the document one? David?
Yeah, mine is actually, I'm having a hard time seeing the boundaries of the thorny skate closed areas in the printout I got. I can see number 5, but number 4 I can't see at all. I was wondering if you could just tell me what the boundaries are.
Okay, the boundary on 4 runs diagonally from southwest to northeast from 70 degrees 30 minutes west and 43 degrees north, and it runs diagonally northeast to 70 degrees west and 4330 north. And then the southern part of the boundary goes along the corner of the western Gulf of Maine area.
Okay. I can't. Thank you. I couldn't see it at all in the handout I got.
Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, Andy. Did the committee... Well, I guess we're focusing on your analysis right now, I suppose. Was there any analysis done by you and the plan development team regarding the impact of the closure alternatives on other fisheries, notably the groundfish fishery, the scallop fishery, especially in the Great South Channel area, since Area 3 encompasses some extremely important bottom?
Yes, there was. In terms of, it was done via the two bin model analysis, which it also tracked changes in catch per unit effort of other species, and they're found in Table 2 of Document 2, which include changes in the landings of cod, haddock, winter flounder, plaice, witch, windowpane, yellowtail, pollock, redfish, whitehake, small mesh groundfish, monkfish, and scallops. And on the far right-hand side, you see the estimated change in landings due to the closures.
Okay, thank you. Regarding skate discards, going through the documents, it became unclear to me how live discards were being treated. It seems to me that they're being treated as, well, as if they're dead, but they're alive. So how did the analysis done by the plan development team deal with the discards of skates that would be considered survivors?
Okay, the PDT assumed that 50% of the estimated discards would survive. So, in fact, we did treat surviving discards as survivals in both the two-bin analysis and the possession limit analysis.
Good. And one other question. It's unclear to me how the analysis was done relative to the bait fishery. Specifically, my understanding is there is a discrete number of vessels that actually direct on skates for bait. How were those particular vessels treated in the analyses?
For these analyses, we assume that landings of whole skates were landed for the bait market. We've done a subsequent analysis last week, and we looked at the differences in price as an indicator of whether skates were landed as for the bait market or for the wing market, and there is a distinct difference. And we came up with about 500,000 pounds of landings, of whole skate landings that were landed for the wing market. But it tracked pretty well. The landings of whole skates represented the landings of bait skates for the bait market pretty well.
Okay, I'll see if I can word this correctly. Did your analyses for trip limit, impacts of different trip limits, did your analyses assume that every vessel that lands whole skate for bait would actually land all of whatever trip limit was established for a bait fishery, so that the impact would be of the bait fishery itself would be, that's what I'm getting at, would that cause the impact of the bait fishery to be overestimated? Because really the bait fishery, as it stands now anyways, is specific, at least the directed bait fishery, is specific to a certain number of vessels and not all of the vessels that may be taking skate or landing skate and then using whatever they have as bait.
The model couldn't distinguish a trip landing skates for both the wing and the bait market at the same time. It assumed that a trip that landed whole skates was for the bait market and applied a whole skate possession limit to it. The model probably overestimates the impact, because the model does not take into account the ability for vessels to take more frequent trips to compensate for a possession limit.
Okay, that's helpful. But again, should the council be concerned that the analyses would overestimate the impact of the bait fishery because you would be taking all of the vessels landing skates right now and using them as bait, and you would be assuming that all those vessels would be then taking whatever trip limit was in place for the bait fishery?
No, the model didn't assume that the possession limit would be taken. It only assumed that the possession limit would be taken if the landings for that trip exceeded the possession limit. It didn't assume that every trip would take the possession limit.
Anyone else on the council? Dave?
Yeah, Andy, just one more question. On these closed areas, it says gear capable of catching skates. Do you have a list of what fisheries those were? Well, for example, a shrimp trawl's got a Nordmoor grade. It's incapable of catching a skate. It goes out the hole. The raised foot rope trawl doesn't catch any. I mean, are those included or not?
We did not develop a comprehensive or an exact list of gears, but certainly in the PDT discussion, gears like the Eliminator trawl and the Nordmoor Great would be excluded.
Okay, I just think it would be important to have a list of what's excluded for the document, so that, you know, when people go to comment on it, they know. You know, they're not making comments about things that don't matter because they're already excluded.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, just to follow up, you referred me to tables 2 and tables 3 regarding the assumed or predicted impact of these proposed closed seasons on other species, cod and the like. And if you would help me understand table 2 specifically, cod, large mesh trawl, about 78,000 pounds would be lost due to the proposed closed seasons. Okay, what are those closed seasons? I can't recall.
The closed seasons are in one of the background documents. Essentially, areas 1 and 2 would close January through June. Area 3 would close July through December. Area 4 would close January through June, and Area 5, July through December.
Okay. Looking at Area 3, which would be closed, you said June or July through December?
July through December.
Only 78,000 pounds of cod would be lost. Is that because the abundance of cod is considered to be relatively low on George's Bank? That seems like an awful low number for the actual loss of codfish through that extensive closure of Area 3.
Because the two-bin model assumes that the trips will be displaced and have the same cod catch per unit effort as other trips in the areas that remain open to fishing. So it what's in Table 2 is the differential change due to changes in catch per unit effort. So for cod, I'm on document 2, table 2, change in cod landings, a reduction of almost 97,000 pounds, or a reduction of 1.5% of the total landings. Now, this is of for table 2, it's of vessels that are targeting skates.
Okay, so then I'm confused, because if these data reference the loss of landings of codfish specifically for vessels that are targeting skates, then what would be the loss of codfish catch by those vessels that are fishing for groundfish but now would be excluded from those areas because of their likely catch of skates? Is there any table that would describe that?
Okay, that's in Table 3, which include vessels targeting species other than skates. And the total net change for both tables together is 1.2 million pounds. We're about a reduction of 8.4%.
All right, thank you. That clarifies it. Now, on scallop meats, the amount of scallop meats that would be lost is relatively small in Table 2. And let's see here. Oh, I see. Okay, so in Table 3, dredge, you've got about 1.5 million pounds. And the assumption is, as well, according to the model predicts that these vessels actually would be moving outside of those areas to fish in other areas for scallops to compensate because they're displaced. Okay.
Yes, one thing with Table 3 is that the two-bin model is predicting an increase in scallop landings. Now, having worked with scallops a bit, a lot of the scallopers in that area are smaller vessels, general category vessels. And the assumption in the two-bin model for that particular sector may not be as realistic, that those vessels would be able to move outside of Area 3 and fish elsewhere for scallops.
Dave Gathel.
Andy, did anybody look at what would happen if you had these areas closed to the possession of skates but open to other fisheries? In other words, we basically have, if we have a 50% assumed mortality on discards, if you had a zero possession limit, you would get roughly, and I say roughly because some skates are going to get caught more than once, a 50% reduction in mortality just by not allowing skates to be possessed in those areas and leave them open for other fisheries.
Yes, we did. But not as down to a zero possession limit. We ran the possession limit analysis down to a point of reduced landed mortality about 40%. Since about, if you have zero possession limit and you're assuming a 50% discard mortality, that's pretty close to having a zero possession limit. But we didn't apply it to those specific areas, with a zero possession limit.
Are those numbers available?
They are. They're in a PDT document that's on our SCATE webpage under technical advice. I don't have it here in the binder material.
Paul Howard.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think the question that was asked about gears capable of catching groundfish was a real good one that we might be able to resolve real quickly. I wouldn't want to think that we're voting on the alternatives today. We're way behind in getting this document in the 1 year that we end overfishing or initiate a rebuilding plan. So I think it's an important question to find out if the Nordmoor Great data catches groundfish and the Eliminator trawl. I think the only data we have on that is probably the experiment that Phil Rule did. I'd like to ask Chris or someone or Pat Fiorelli if we can look through some of the data we have at the office somehow and see if there's any data that shows, bycatch data for the Nordmoor Great and the Eliminator trawl so that we know definitively if those gears will be allowed. Does that make sense, or?
Andy?
Yeah, I did the analysis that we had at, I think, the last council meeting on the Eliminator trawl, and it reduced skate bycatch by about 98%. The Nordmoor Great data is in the sea sampling data, so I think the data exists to do that.
Paul?
So the Eliminator trawl is a gear capable of catching groundfish. We have data that says it catches 98% escapes, but it catches 2% or whatever you just said. So, I don't want to get into the same thing we get into with midwater trawls in the closed areas. They're a gear capable of catching groundfish.
What I was saying is the analysis showed that it reduced skate bycatch considerably and might be excluded from the list of gears that would be those areas not open to fishing.
Dave?
Yeah, I think the question we want to ask is gear not capable of catching skates and then define what that acceptable threshold is. If it's 5%, then that would you could go through the data pretty quickly and see. I could think of three or four things that'll fall out right quickly that, have reduced on the order of 95, 98, like that. I don't think the standard should be groundfish because the people are going to be in there specifically to catch groundfish. We're trying to get them not to catch skates. And I think there are some gears that do not catch. Yeah, you meant skates, but I just want to make sure we get the record clear that we're looking at skates.
Anyone else on the council? Okay, Joan, if we could bring up the motions from the committee, we'll start there. Okay, I'll read it. It's a committee motion. It carried 3-0. If you refer to document 6, it's the draft, it's the meeting summary of the Oversight Committee and the Advisory Panel. We had a joint meeting. And comments from committee members and AP members are embedded in the discussion side of this document, as well as the motion and the vote count. So this motion carried at the committee level 3-0. It's to recommend that in Amendment 16, the council change the B-day at sea skate possession limit for all gears to be consistent with the trawl B-day at sea possession limit, which at the time we believed to be 500 pounds live weight under B-day at sea program. So it's a recommendation from the committee to the council to make it consistent. All B-days at sea fishing will have a 500-pound limit on skate species. It's a committee motion, so it doesn't require a second. Any discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 15. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries 15-0 with one abstention. Move on to the next motion. This is a gear restricted areas to reduce mortality from bycatch and incidental landings measure to be moved to the considered and rejected bin in our document. Andy, if you could just summarize what it is that the committee is moving out of an alternative and into the considered and rejected.
This is the alternative that's on top of page 3 of document 1, the decision document. And it's one that would have otherwise closed the 5 skate management areas to gears capable of catching skates, rather than just use those as a time area closure for vessels targeting skates.
Okay, so the committee deliberated and decided to recommend this alternative to considered but rejected or rejected. So it's a committee motion, does not require a second. Discussion from the council. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve. Opposed? Three. Abstentions? One. The motion carries 12-3 with one abstention. Next one, Joan. Sally.
Yeah, just a question. So this means then that there's nothing that addresses skate bycatch in the document. Is that correct?
Tempted to say yes, but
I'm just reading off of the
decision
document.
I'm trying to think of any of the other measures could be considered addressing that issue. Andy, if you can think of
the only way the remaining part of the document would address bycatch is the discard of skates on vessels that are targeting skates when they're undersized or prohibited species. Either trips would be shorter and not fish as much on skates, or they would be displaced to other areas where they may encounter fewer skates. But that's the only type of measure that would address discards per se. Then secondarily, there are a set of alternatives using a hard TAC in which catch would be monitored against the TAC and deducted from future TACs through an accountability measure, whereas the target TAC would not take that approach. We take an approach of monitoring landings against a TAL.
Anything else, Sally?
I don't know what else to say. It kind of seems like a big gap, and I'm just thinking about what the public comment might be on this. And I asked the question, and maybe some of the suggestions that Andy made will be further fleshed out during public comment on this to make sure that there are more specific measures to address bycatch.
George.
Yeah, and to that end, I would suggest that the document be clear in explaining what Andy just explained, so the public does know what measures in there might impact the bycatch and can count and can comment intelligently on that.
So So can we assume that what George just suggested will take place so that people can be directed, if they're interested in commenting on bycatch, directed in a way to do that productively with what's left on the table?
Yeah, be sure to incorporate Andy's comments into a section in the document. Anything further on this issue? Okay. The next motion was a committee motion to add an alternative in Amendment 3 that establishes a hard TAC for the bait fishery that would be divided proportionally based on seasonal catch rates, and this bait fishery would have no possession limit. It would be a hard tack that's monitored seasonally or quarterly, and quarters or seasons would shut down when it's projected that the tack for that period of time has been reached. This was an alternative that came from the advisors at our joint advisory panel committee meeting. It was something that they were very keenly interested on, and they talked at length about how the bait fishery is market-driven, set by the lobster industry, and how sometimes they had to fill big orders and sometimes they didn't have to fill big orders, but having that type of flexibility was something they wanted, and they were willing to work under a hard TAC in order to get that. Some of those comments are reflected in the summary document. It's a committee motion that does not require a second discussion. George?
Yeah, for clarification, the hard tack, is that landings?
In this case, it would apply to land needs in the bait fishery.
Okay, so that's something that would be reported by the dealer reports as landing.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? 15. Opposed? Abstentions? 1 abstention. The motion carries 15-0 with 1 abstention. Okay, Andy, if you could go through document number 4 for the council.
Document 4 outlines the two approaches taken to administer interim catch limits and accountability measures to be included in the document for public hearing, and they are associated with certain of the alternatives in your decision document. The first being a hard TAC approach in which landings and estimated discards would count against that hard TAC, and once a certain percentage, we haven't identified what that percentage was, skate landings would be prohibited and the skate gear restricted areas would go into effect. And then in terms of accountability measures, any overages in year one would be deducted from year two. The second approach to be taken out to public hearing is a target TAC approach where discard proportions are assumed and landings are monitored and counted against a TAL. And then in terms of accountability measures, would apply in season when landings equal or anticipated some percentage of the wing or the bait fishery, possession limits for that sector would be reduced to an incidental level, such as 500 pounds of whole weight. So that draft describes those two processes associated with the alternatives.
Okay, is there any discussion or questions on these two alternatives that we hope to take out to public comment? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, first, a comment leading up to my questions, and that is, this shows different options for interim catch limits and accountability measures. I assume it was put together by the plan development team with, of course, Andy in the lead. My question is, to what extent are the different committees, the different plan development teams, that is, to what extent are the different plan development teams, and specifically council staff members, working together, talking back at the office, to work as a team on a consistent approach for determining ACL, ICL, accountability measure strategies? I read this and I became a bit confused since, well, first of all, we haven't got the guidance. Second of all, the Groundfish Committee is moving forward with some suggestions as to how we should deal with ACLs and accountability measures, but they seem to be different from this strategy. At least on the face of it, it seems to be different. So I would greatly appreciate it if I could be assured that there is some communication within the staff so that this council gets consistent advice regarding how we should deal with these very important issues. So I don't want to find ourselves, for example, doing it one way for skates and another way for groundfish and another way for monkfish, and I'm not going to be able to follow it, and I don't think most council members would be able to follow it. So my question is, again, was there some talk about this within this between staff so that we're going to get a consistent approach?
Paul Howard.
I'll let Chris talk further if he has to, but the staff has met several times talking about ACLs and AMs, and they also met several times to determine the how to deal ACLs with states, and have recommended to the executive committee and council for a new policy. So they've talked at length about ACLs and AMs, in-season adjustments, after the fact, and you know, and we've also had those communications with the full council of what to expect. So I'm very satisfied that they've been working together on these approaches.
I'm glad you're satisfied, but I'm still curious. I'm having a difficult time seeing the consistency. Anyways, back to the questions. In this document, there is reference to, and this is in the first two paragraphs of the document, where it says, actually in the second paragraph, both implementations of ICLs described below would apply to combined landings and both live and dead discards. So again, why is the word live discard put in here? I would think it would just be dead discards. Is that a mistake, or
I think it's just a matter of interpretation and wording. I think both the TACs assume a 50% discard mortality rate, and the monitoring would also assume the same.
Okay, so it's just a matter of clarification. Then. Okay, fine. And then the latter part of that sentence says, requiring adequacy sampling data or other programs to accurately estimate discards. There's nothing in these documents that we have before us now that addresses that issue specifically. So can I assume that that will eventually be dealt with, that some group will offer up the necessary advice regarding what defines adequate for us to accurately estimate discards, since it's critical for this whole approach?
Well, I think you already have that in SBRM, and that's probably what really this is referring to.
All right, thank you. Now, the hard TACs with overage deductions in subsequent years, that specifically references skate GRAs. So my question is, because we just considered and rejected management measures, well, we considered and rejected the skate GRAs, how does that particular action the council just took affect this option?
Well, this draft was written before the committee voted to take out GRAs, and one of the alternatives that was discussed extensively at the committee was using GRAs as an accountability measure, and that was not taken forward. So the PDT has not had an opportunity to meet since that time to revise this draft.
All right, so then that's the next step, obviously, that the PDT would have to reflect on this particular option, assuming we approve it, and determine the implications of our last vote, I assume. Okay.
George Darcy.
Thank you. Just a caution, anything that is going to try to rely on discard estimates on a real-time or near real-time basis, I think is going to be extremely difficult for the Observer program to get that information out. So I see you have a moving average here. What kind of lag time are you talking about between those estimates and applying them?
Perhaps Toby can respond to that. I'm not sure where that came from.
Sure, I helped draft this document. This is mainly based on some input from the Fisheries Statistics Office and how they manage the hard tax in the U.S.-Canada multi-species program. And I'm not sure exactly what the lag time is. I think it's in the range of a month or so. I think about every month they update. They get updated observer data and adjust the discard to kept ratio. So it might be every 3 to 4 weeks, something along those lines.
All right, so the intent is that this would be applied in a way that would be doable for the people who generate the data. That time lag would be based on something that's practical. Is that the intent?
That's the intent.
Okay, thanks.
Paul Howard.
I just want to, for the point Dr. Pierce made about, I know he seemed a bit confused about ICL, and I just want to remind him that that's not a abbreviation that's noted anywhere else except in this plan, because Skates was the first stock to bring to the SSC, and they were very reluctant, not having any guidance and guidelines on ACLs and ABC, to say this is an interim catch limit. So Andy created ICL as interim catch limit. For the main fact, they did not want to call it an ACL until this guidance. Otherwise, we're all on the same page. We've identified a schedule for all our SSCs to look at groundfish ACLs, because hopefully when we do groundfish in the final amendment, we will have the guidance. And so all our plans henceforth will have ACLs, hopefully.
Any further discussion on document number 4? All right. The committee didn't make a motion one way or the other on this, and I'm just thinking now that we probably want to have a motion to include these alternatives in the document. So if someone would like to make that motion. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd make a motion that we include both of the aforementioned documents in the options into the document.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Any further discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? Dana, is that a question?
No.
Oh, you're just getting ahead of the curve?
Holding out.
Proxy voter, okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fourteen opposed. One abstentions. Motion carries 14 to 1. All right, Andy, document number 5. It's the discussion on the annual review and the specification process.
Document 5 is a proposed replacement to the baseline review process that's currently in the plan. And there would be, according to the proposal, an annual review of the fishery, given to the council at the June council meeting, which would review measures that are in the pipeline or measures that have recently gone into place and their effects on skate conservation, and advise the council as to whether there were any problems or issues of concern. That annual review may or may not generate an ad hoc framework adjustment in the skate or other plans or adjustments to measures that are currently in the pipeline. In addition to that, there would be a safe report and a specification process either conducted every other year or every third year, which would analyze the changes in the skate fishery in more detail, progress towards rebuilding, and identify and estimate new ABCs, TACs, and TALs for the upcoming or subsequent two fishing years. And it would, in fact, initiate a specification process unless it also initiate a framework adjustment to adjust other measures, management measures. If there's no regulatory action that took place and was implemented to establish new specifications, the existing specifications would continue.
Okay. Any questions on these two processes laid out? Paul Howard?
George, even though we don't have the guidelines, we've always run into trouble, especially with herring specs, to roll them over. You know, if we don't take an action, they get rolled over. We've always had to take an action to roll them over. Do you envision that in the ACL guidelines, if we set two-year specs and nothing changes, do we still have to do annual catch limits for another 2 years, or can we just roll them over? This is assuming we can roll them over.
I think the proposed guidance will allow for multiple year specifications and multiple year ACLs. You'd have to explicitly determine that that's what you wanted to do and do the analysis consistent with that, and you'd still have the option if something went wrong to, you know, take an additional action. But it would, I think, allow for that.
Dave Gathel.
Yeah, if we do choose to change them, is it an amendment or a framework? Or do we know?
To change the period or the frequency?
Yeah, if we want to make any changes to the ABC, to TAL, anything. We don't have it specified in the document. It says a management action. Is that because we don't know, or?
I think it would depend. My read was that it would depend on the scale of the action being contemplated. And if you're just going to do a spec process, you're going to review your specs for the next 3 years. That's one level of analysis and document. And if you're talking about, you know, I'll bring up the issue later, but there was some talk about a control date and limited access and all of these other things. If that's going to be incorporated, that's a different type of a management action. So I think, unless I have it wrong, I think it's written that way because of that. Now, we'll have to put in a list of frameworkable items in the amendment. We can review that as well.
Okay. I wondered if it was suitably vague for a reason. Now I understand what it is. I think we should, I mean, like you said, if we ought to the extent possible, tell people what will require a framework and what will require an amendment, because, you know, I mean, it takes forever to do an amendment. A framework, at least we can maybe get it done in the same year. So it's just my comment.
Thank you. Chris Kellogg.
To Dave's question, I think the most important distinction is what kind of NEPA document is it going to require. What makes an amendment wouldn't have to take so long unless if it didn't require an EIS. So it's not actually, amendments don't require EISs. It's the scope of the action. So I think what you want to do is pay attention to the NEPA discussion, when we have it on Thursday and council comments and what comes out of that. But, you know, I think that hopefully we can do an environmental assessment, whether you call it a spec package or a framework isn't going to make much difference.
Okay, so like the previous motion, the committee didn't make a specific motion to include the annual review language and the bi or triennial safe report and specs. So if someone would like to make a motion to include that in the document. Terry? Seconded by Dave Pierce.
So moved.
Any further discussion? George?
A question. Do you intend to include this as buy or try and then take comment as to which is preferred?
That's
leave both options in there.
Yes.
Okay.
Anything further? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 16 in favor. Okay. There was one other item I just wanted to point out to the council. It's in document number 6 on page 4. The bottom half of the first paragraph and into the second paragraph is a discussion that I alluded to, that the advisory panel or members of the advisory panel were contemplating whether or not the council would, could, or should announce a control date for skate fishing. We had some limited back and forth at the committee and AP meeting, but did not reach a conclusion. I think partially because the council members on the committee didn't feel that announcing a control date was worth much unless you were willing to immediately do something with it. So we don't end up issuing another control date that becomes stale. But we committed to the AP members to bring this to the council's attention. If there's any discussion the council members want to have about it, or if anyone in the audience wants to comment on it one way or the other. I don't see any hands. Okay. Andy, is there anything else that neglected to bring up?
Yeah, the trip versus day boat possession limit is right. Document 7.
Could you guide us through that?
During the discussion with the advisory panel and the committee, the PDT analyzed a single possession limit for the wing fishery. And some members of the advisory panel suggested a different possession limit for vessels taking trips less than 24 hours, similar to other plans. And the oversight committee requested a analysis of that to obtain equivalent reductions in landed mortality for both types of trips. And so document 7 provides that analysis, and I can summarize it really quick by saying that over the broad spectrum, that the day trip, reducing possession limits on trips less than 24 hours to achieve the same mortality reduction would require a possession limit that's about 70% of a trip boat limit. For trips greater than 24 hours. So those limits are given in Table 1 for the various alternatives and allocation options. And I guess the question remaining out there is at the end of the written description whether under such a scenario vessels that formerly took trips longer than 24 hours would then try and take shorter trips to compensate for the possession limit for the trip boats and thereby land more skates than they did previously.
So I guess the alternatives in front of us are, do we want to include these alternatives, trip limit alternatives, for the public to comment on and then take a whack at them after public comment? Or, and if that's the case, then we need a motion because the committee just asked the PDT to do the work and present it here at the council. So there's no specific motion, and if there isn't one today, then that, those alternatives you're looking at will not make it into the document. Jim Odlin.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion that we include possession limits for the skate fisheries in the public hearing document, as described in Table 5, I believe.
Table 1.
Table 1?
Table 1. Is there a second? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Any discussion or further discussion on the issue? We'll make sure it gets up on the board properly. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I assume that if this motion passes, the table will be modified to remove the references to the gear restricted areas.
Andy?
Yeah, it will be done that way in the alternative, in the amendment document. This motion could be clarified a bit, but I can do that at the office if you'd like me to do that. In other words, this possession limit for is day boat and trip boat possession, skate possession limits for the wing fishery be included in Amendment 3.
That's what's reflected in the table. So, okay. Dave Gaethel.
Well, the motion says skate possession limits, and the document actually has them for wings and for bait skates. Isn't that correct?
The analysis.
Well, the motion doesn't say wings only.
Yeah, the analysis does not include a day boat and trip boat possession limit separately for the bait fishery, only for the wing fishery. And that's what was asked of the PDT.
All right, now I'm confused. is there separate limits under this for the bait fishery for whether you're a day boat or a trip boat or not?
No, there's not.
Okay.
Anything further? Anyone in the audience? Oh, Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, just a clarification. In Table 1, the left-hand column, second column over, it says time area closures. So this particular set of possession limits, the different allocations by the different type of fishery and boat, includes for every one of the options some application of time area closures. Am I correct?
The first line of each allocation is possession limit only, so that would apply to alternatives that did not include time area closures. Then the line that says time area with 500-pound incidental would apply to those alternatives which include the time area closures as part of their measures.
Okay, fine. So that particular column, the heading of the column should be modified somewhat to reflect what's in the column itself. Okay. That clarifies it. Thank you.
Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. You ready for Paul Howard?
Andy, at the SSC meeting, the SSC gave us interim catch limits, and the council subsequent to that meeting approved those catch limits. Is that in here? Is that an alternative that says, when we develop this DEIS, we will use these catch limits for these two species of skates? Is that in here?
All of these analyses used those interim catch limits and TALs that were approved at the April Council meeting and proposed and forwarded by the SSC. These analyze measures that, if applied to the fisheries in 2007, would achieve those catch limits. So it's all in here.
Okay, you ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 15-0 with one abstention. Anything else, Andy?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, so then we would need a motion to forward this document out for public hearing. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know whether you wanted to discuss the timeline.
Yeah, before we do that, I'd like to make a suggestion through a motion. And before I make it, let me explain why I intend to make this motion, and that is, obviously, we always desire to bring out to public hearing as many options as possible, but my theory always has been that it makes sense to bring out options that we feel are doable, that are feasible, that we feel comfortable with, and not to bring out options that really are dead on the doorstep, at least dead on my doorstep. And they're dead on my doorstep because I look at Table 2 and Table 3 that we discussed a little earlier on, and I see that Table 3, I see that there's a very significant loss of catch of cod, haddock, winter flounder, and other species with a modest gain in decrease, that is, with a modest decrease in skate catch. The trade-off doesn't seem to be sensible to me. Why create a situation where, or offer up an alternative, where we will sacrifice potentially a great deal of catch and landings of groundfish that will be controlled through the groundfish plan, the next amendment? Why should we do it through the skate plan when, again, the drop of skates is relatively... The change in catch landings is relatively small. If there was a large change in skate catch as a consequence of the area management strategies, then I might be more receptive to it. But it's small. You see it in Table 2, you see it in Table 3, and you actually see it in Table 4 as well. Less than 10% or so decrease in skate catch, and certainly in Table 3, again, minus 35% when you add them all up, minus 35% just cod, haddock, and winter flounder. So I don't see the sense of moving forward, offering up alternatives that would result in that sort of loss. And we also have the unforeseen consequences that always happen when we oblige fishermen to shift from one place to the next. I can see fishermen being forced to shift their effort closer to shore, being more on winter flounder than they otherwise would be. And who knows, whatever else. Unforeseen consequences of area closures that force fishermen to go from one spot to the next. So I would move that we delete alternatives 1, 2, and 3 from consideration in draft amendment 3. Those are the ones that all include area management. 4, 5, and 6 are different.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Dr. Pierce, did you want to provide anything else? Or
only that, again, I understand that perhaps the majority of council members would want to bring it out for public comment, but my attitude is, Let's use our own good judgment as to what really is a viable alternative before we bring it to public hearing. And if it's not viable, don't bring it. Unless, of course, there are council members around the table who feel that that sort of a strategy, those area management initiatives, those closures are viable alternatives, then obviously If they're considered to be viable, then this motion won't pass. But I'm strongly in favor, obviously, because I made the motion of deleting these alternatives that will create more chaos than benefit to the skate resource.
You're saying no more lines and no more displacement. Okay. Dr. Weinberg.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up on the last two speakers. I'm coming in a little cold on this because I wasn't at the April meeting, but I haven't heard a lot of discussion about the connection between the management measures, which appear to be for the entire complex of species, versus the link to the two species that are overfished and are in a rebuilding plan. And I guess I need to understand a little bit more. Perhaps Andy can fill me in on how if there are target catches for each of the species, and that has somehow been translated into these management measures in a consistent way, then that would be good. But from the discussion and looking through the documentation, I'm just not finding anything that relates what's going on with those two species that are overfished to the measures that are being proposed. And then what Dave Pierce just brought up about whether area management would be effective or not, I guess that the comment I made is related to that, because it depends on whether you're thinking about individual species or not, or just the entire complex. Now, I realize that these are very difficult to identify, so the typical way of monitoring would be hard, unless observers are the key to identifying the species rather than just looking at wings, which are difficult to identify and would take longer getting into the dealer database. So those are my thoughts.
Andy, you want to address Jim's first question?
Well, there's a couple of questions, and also with clarify the area management table used for this decision.
Sure.
All right. In terms of their effect on individual species and specifically overfished winter skate and thorny skate, there's a lot of ground to cover, and there's a lot of documents that were at the last meeting. If I can summarize, however, the majority of landings in the wing fishery are winter skate. So possession limits and things and associated with the areas 1, 2, and 3 would be beneficial for winter skate. The bait fishery lands mostly little skate, but seasonally also lands some winter skate, somewhat from areas 1 and 2. So the possession limit in the bait fishery would be beneficial for winter skate there, but also would be somewhat beneficial little skate, which is, I'm not sure if it's official or unofficially approaching an overfished condition. And that's where the PDT was coming from. We couldn't come up with a way to monitor catch by species because of the identification problem. So the PDT has recommended applying limits and so on by fishery to achieve the desired results. The areas are targeted towards specific species, winter and thorny. Without area management, there really is nothing in here to help thorny skate at all. In fact, possession limits, only the discarded component of trips that are shortened because of a possession limit would benefit thorny skate. Was there something else that you covered, Jim, that I didn't answer? Okay. As far as the area management effects, the table we really look at is table 4. And what, through the PDT process and the discussion with the advisors, is how to manage area closures with vessels that are targeting skates on a variety of days at sea program and such. And the PDT felt that, or recommended using an incidental limit of 500 pounds to define what trips would not be allowed within the area closures. So the results to really look at and the effects on various species are in Table 4 as they apply to vessels which are targeting skates. So you get 15.1% reduction in skate wing landed mortality from the closures. You get a 15% increase in yellowtail flounder. You get a 48% decrease in, I'm losing my lines here, haddock landings. That's primarily Area 3. And that's on trips. That's four landings of those species only on trips which are targeting skates. The alternatives that remain in the document only use time area closures as they apply to vessels which are or had landed more than 500 pounds of skates. The only inconsistency that perhaps we need to, the PDT needs to iron out is in the accountability measures for the hard tax, which as written, use the skate gear restricted areas as an accountability measure. Thanks.
Jim, you satisfied?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, in light of what Andy just said, I've got to make sure I understand. With alternatives 1, 2, and 3, the area management alternatives, the first three alternatives, if the area is closed, only the directed fishery for skate would be shut out of the area? All other vessels could still go in there, could still catch skate as a bycatch? Seeking clarification as to what those particular alternatives actually entail.
Yeah, I'm sorry, not all the details are in a written document at this point, but what the PDT is discussing how to implement this is a vessel, if it intended on landing more than 500 pounds of skates, would declare into the skate fishery via macro code. And if the vessel was on a declared skate trip and could land more than 500 pounds, it would be excluded from fishing within these areas during those seasons, as I outlined before. Vessels that did not declare into a skate fishery would be able to land up to 500 pounds of skates, and they would be able to fish within those areas.
All right, well, I misunderstood then, because I thought this would be a complete closure to any gear capable of catching skates. And since that is not the case, I'll probably not support my motion. So I withdraw it. We've had extensive discussion, and Gene may say we have to vote on it, but whatever you care to do, Mr. Chairman. It's no,
without objection to withdrawing the motion, any objection? Yes, yes, Mike, that was 20 minutes of your life. Yes. Okay, the motion is withdrawn. Anything further? Okay. We need a motion to forward this out to the public for comment. Doug?
Make a motion that we forward this document for Amendment 3 of the skate plan out for public comment.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion, Paul Howard.
I thought, don't we first have to complete a do the analysis and put it before the council before we vote it out for public hearings? Or what is our timeline on skates, Chris? We're just going to do the DEIS and then not bring it back to the council? We've got to analyze this now.
That was discussed at the executive committee, and the only way we can meet the timeline, possibly for May 1 implementation, would be to go straight to the DEIS, develop that, and the staff would work with the committee chair and maybe have some committee review as it develops the DEIS. It isn't, when we say the staff will do that, or the PDT, it's not without some communication. Even given that, it's probably difficult to meet the timeline for and have the council decide by October. You know, we're shooting, the timeline shows that the council decides on final measures in October. That was discussed, but it you know, you just may not meet that. You may find we're going to November, but that's the best we can do and meet the timeline.
Well, we are shooting for it. We also have the SSC scheduled to review this document in September when it meets.
Yeah.
We have all intentions of making that timeline. George?
I think Pat Kirkle expressed some concern at the executive committee meeting about not having the council have the benefit of seeing the full analysis of this document. So, well, I understand. We certainly have encouraged you to meet the deadline or get this in place as quickly as possible. If you're going to take this approach and vote it out now, I would urge you to be sure that the document is fully analyzed and described before you try to put it into the process, so that you know, we don't have to come back around again.
I'm going to take a 10-minute break. Summarize the discussion I had. The suggestion has been made that the council move this document to the committee for finalization prior to public comment. Which would require a without objection, we could change the motion to do that. Also, in discussion with some of the council members about that suggestion, in an effort to give council members an opportunity who are not on the committee, to give them an opportunity to comment, you would have two avenues. One would be to attend the committee meeting, and the other could be we could make sure that you get a copy of the document prior to the committee meeting, and you could send your comments to me as the chair of the committee meeting, to give you an opportunity to make sure that the document as written comports with the discussions we've had today. So if there's no objection, I'll change the motion on the board to reflect those comments. Okay. So it would say to move forward the SCATE Draft Amendment 3 document to the SCATE Committee for finalization prior to public comment, and I guess in parentheses you could put that the council will receive the document prior to the SCATE Committee meeting, and they can provide the chair of the committee or staff of the committee with comments relative to that document so that the committee can take them up. Okay. Terry?
What's your projected timetable for the SCATE committee meeting?
We were talking about that. I think we were gunning for some time in August. Anything further from the council?
Doug and I have an ASMSC meeting that 1 week.
We'll be sure to have it that week, Terry. Yeah. And we'll be sure to schedule around that. Anyone in the audience? Okay, back to the council. You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. It's unanimous. Okay, that's all I had under skates. Andy, you all set? Okay, thank you, Andy. We just took a break, so we'll go right into the last agenda item, which is SBRM amendment. It's behind tab number 1.